I see it. House Committee on Revenue for March 3rd, 2015 will come to order. Everyone will note that it is now 1:30. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2672. Dave?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, before Representative Buckley testifies, I would like to spend about 2 or 3 minutes to go over some background materials. So let me start with this OEA forecast. It's a summary of lottery resources. The highlighted yellow is allocation of resources, and right below that there is county economic development. And the source of this money comes from Video Lottery. So 2.5% of Video Lottery net receipts will be dedicated to counties for their economic development activities. So what the bill does, the bill requires each county in which an exempt strategic investment program property is located to certify each year to the Oregon State Lottery Commission the amount of property taxes that the school districts within the county do not receive due to the SIP. And by the way, Paul will have some general discussion about how this strategic investment program works, and we have tax expenditure uploaded on the OLIS about SIP program. So then this money actually is going to the state school fund. Directs the commission to withhold that amount, the amount of property taxes that school districts do not receive. The measure directs the commission, Lottery Commission, to withhold that amount from the county's share of economic development fund and dedicate it to the state school fund. And of course, this money becomes part of state school fund along with general fund allocation and the lottery revenue. So that's a little background.
Thank you very much. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Chair Bernhardt. Members of the committee, I'm representing Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. I'm the House co-chair of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. As I was joking with your members prior to the hearing, we have so many ways, and we're always looking for more means to address the needs, and particularly in regards to the state school fund. The state school fund is getting a lot of attention, as it always should. And we are so far away from funding the state school fund at a level that actually makes significant advances in education in our state. And many of us have been working on this for years, trying to figure out how we can make a major investment in education in our state. We're looking for every possible path to do so. Your committee is wrestling with SIPs, how SIPs work, and what the benefit really comes from the SIPs, and what are the best steps for the SIPs going forward. We'd like this to be part of your conversation. Passionately believe that the state school fund should not be depleted by choices that are made, particularly on the local level, without an understanding of what that means to the state school fund as a whole. And I'm very open to economic development. Well, we've tried to fund really well-thought-out economic development efforts in the past, but my priority is the state school fund. Right now I'm receiving emails from all over the state, districts all over the state, teachers, parents, superintendents, who are saying at the co-chair's budget level, even with the increase in property tax in the last forecast, there are districts around the state who will lay off teachers, who will cut more school days, even as we're adding full-day kindergarten. So if my hair is on fire on this, there's a reason for it. I ask for your committee to wrestle with this idea, to wrestle with what is the best expenditure of our resources in terms of education, which is the priority for the state of Oregon. It should be. It needs to be. And this is one way that we can actually take a look at what choices counties are making and the impacts that has on the state school fund, and perhaps reversing that a little to let counties make choices if they choose to make those choices for their county's economic development, but to not impact the state school fund in those choices, because that means a county in one area of the state is making a choice impacting students in another area of the state, and I do think that should be a statewide decision that we make. And I appreciate your time and consideration, Rep. Barnhart, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee, and Lori Wimmer from the OEA is here to testify as well, and I'm glad to hang around and answer some questions after her statement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 42,000 OEA members around the state. And we're here honored to be supporting this bill, which contemplates a process to reimburse Oregon's state school fund for property tax losses that result from county strategic initiative program decisions, SIP decisions. Ever since it was enacted in 1993, the economic development tool of property tax abatement through this SIP program has resulted in losses of local property tax revenues to the education sector. The education community has had no voice in these decisions. While fees are set for local governments to receive in lieu of some of the abated property taxes, other revenues, schools have not been formally similarly accommodated. When the legislature further developed a plan to reimburse local government losses through gain share, the 50% personal income tax receipts that go back to, out to local governments, again, schools were left out. Finally, whenever those same SIP recipient enterprises receive a preferential tax treatment through state-level tax breaks, the general fund is reduced, and again, the state school fund pays the price. And according to the tax expenditure report, fully $3 billion of our tax breaks are based on economic development programs. And so they already exist among the total of the 378 tax breaks we have in the tax expenditure report. And so there are plenty of ways in which those economic development incentives propel our economy. Because of the situation, Oregon has disinvested in the last couple decades in our public education system, and that's why you keep reading headlines about how we have among the largest class sizes, the shortest school year, the lowest graduation rates, and the highest absentee rates. The 78th Legislative Assembly is poised once again to fall short of fully funding our schools because of a lack of that sufficient resource base. And so whenever new tax breaks are added to the list, we further whittle away the money that would otherwise be available for core services. And yet hundreds of millions of dollars in new tax breaks are proposed each session, and this is no exception this session. And those only require a simple majority vote, whereas increasing revenue requires a three-fifths vote. So we just keep eroding the base year after year. When local governments exacerbate that problem by also reducing available revenues to schools pay the price across the state because of the way the state school fund spreads. It's not just a local revenue loss, it becomes a state revenue loss. So we asked for this bill as a way to finally draw a connection between local government abatement decisions and the deleterious impact to our schools. We asked for a plan that would reimburse those property tax losses to the state school fund by deducting state pass-through resources those same counties that make that decision would otherwise receive, so that our students can be held harmless. LC proposed the method found in the initial version of this bill, and we've since found out that that would reimburse only about $1 out of every 10 of loss, so we need a different pot of money, I think, and not the one that they had suggested if we're really going to reimburse schools on a dollar for dollar basis. So we expect that there would probably need to be an amendment to this bill, and we would also, of course, welcome being part of the larger SIP monetization conversation if this committee should choose to form a work group. We'd love to be a part of it. Thank you so much.
Do you have an amendment to propose?
Mr. Chair, members, at this point we don't. We haven't been able to focus on it. Your committee swims in these waters all the time, and we'd be happy to take under consideration any recommendation you might have.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Leininger.
Thank you so much. Thank you both for being here and for bringing this important bill, which is one of several bills on SIP and gain share issues that we're going to be considering this session. You know, I represent Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland, so the high schools that are in my district are Riverdale High School, Wilson High School, Lake Oswego, and Lake Ridge High School, and the people in my district care extremely deeply about high-quality education. It seems to be the absolute top priority in our district, and they tell me a lot about concerns about class sizes and the fact our kids go to school perhaps as much as 3 weeks less than the national average in terms of instructional time. And, you know, we absolutely need to support strong businesses in Oregon, but I think we struggle sometimes to appreciate the trade-offs, and I think that the bill that you've brought and several of the other bills on the table related to SIP and gain share this session are going to help us illustrate that when we spend money through these tax expenditures, which, as you noted, Ms. Wimmer, don't require a supermajority vote, it's spending, you know, it's the same amount of spend as when we spend it in other ways because we've just foregone collecting it, and we need to give it careful attention. I would love to volunteer Chair Barnhart to be on any SIP work group that our committee decides to have, and I'm excited to try to come up with a work through that makes sense for all of our communities, including for people who care about education. It's the best form of economic development, in my opinion. Indeed.
Thank you, Representative. Other Representative Davis, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Are you also volunteering for the work group?
Do careful when you raise your hand in this committee. Thank you, Chair. And thank you both very much for bringing a really vital discussion to this committee and to the legislature. The Strategic Investment Program is a great story that we need to tell really every session because we often forget some of the great gains that have come from it. For those who you don't on the committee know, the SIP program requires an investment in urban areas of $100 million or more, and in rural areas of Oregon, $25 million or more, fully taxed up to those points, and then the companies get some abatement after that. Because of our unique tax structure in the state of Oregon, which chooses to fully tax personal property and business equipment up above those rates, and it's really fascinating to read some of the research that our own revenue office has done. You know, in this time when we're really concerned with wage inequality and the fact that we're trying to raise incomes in Oregon, last year in 2013-2014, LRO and our state economist estimated that there were actually 6,200 Oregon jobs created, and the average income for those jobs was $100,000 a year. And more. And I think that's actually a low estimate. I know for many in Washington County, the average wage is closer to, I think, $120,000, $140,000. So it's just really exciting to get to tell a story here, to talk about really the opportunity that the rest of Oregon, I think, could have to invest in the SIP program. Just want to thank you both for bringing the discussion here.
Thank you. So far, no questions. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today.
And thank Mr. Chair, if I could add just one thing.
Please.
With Representative Davis's great comments about the economic stimulus effect of this program and the fact that it has clawbacks, we too appreciate that. And we're not suggesting, of course, that there would be anything that takes that off the table. We simply just want to make sure that we think through the impacts that are caused when you take the revenues off the table for the schools, which are also a very strong, and as Representative Leininger said, strong and maybe number one economic development tool for the state of Oregon. We are either number one or number two as employers in most communities in Oregon. 50% of the communities of Oregon, the school district is the largest employer. So what happens on Main Street happens to schools. What happens to schools happens to Main Street. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Whitsitt.
I was wondering how many SIP projects presently are in Oregon in each of the categories, the 100 million or more and the 25 million or more?
Mr. Chair, I defer to Representative Davis on that one.
May I note there's a number of documents in OLIS on these three bills. At least one of them that I've perused answers that particular question. So I'd refer you to those documents. I think you may find them enlightening. Thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Testimony. We have Tom Linhares, Jim McCauley, Mary Stern, please.
Mm-hmm.
In case you're wondering about the my choice of panels, I'm just going down the list.
Good Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Linhares, and I live at 740 Golden Pheasant Drive, Redmond, Oregon, and I'm here today representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. We agree that this is an important bill in that it highlights the impact that exemptions, not just the SIP exemption, but all exemptions, as well as urban renewal, for that matter, has on taxing district revenue under the current rate-based system that Oregon uses to collect property taxes, as opposed to the levy-based system that existed prior to 1990's Measure 5 and 1997's Measure 50, where it didn't really matter what the value of the district was. With a dollar-based levy, the assessor simply recalculated the rate to raise the same amount of money, and no matter how much value was taken off the roll from exemptions or urban renewal, all taxing districts received the same amount of money. That's not the case today. Value off the roll leads to a direct loss of revenue to all local districts, including schools. My purpose here today is really to point out what I think are some things in the bill that maybe could be changed to make the bill better. It says the amount of property taxes that school districts within county lose. If the intent, and the intent seems to be clear in subsection 2, if the intent is to reimburse the state school fund revenue that they would not otherwise receive if not for SIP, then you have to recognize that there are three types of levies that school districts can have: the permanent rate levy, local option levy, and bond levies. Only the permanent rate levy is affected by the state school fund. Local option levies and bond levies are strictly revenue to the district that imposes, based on voter approval, those levies. So if the purpose is to reimburse the state school fund, I would recommend that the calculation of property taxes lost due to SIP be limited to just those taxes raised from the permanent rate levy. The other problem that we see is, the second problem, is on line 10, it says within the county that the school district did not receive. Well, districts receive property tax monies over a 5 or 6 year period. And even the state school fund tracks collections over, I'm not an expert on the state school support fund, like 14 or 16 months. So to do an accurate job of calculating what the districts did not receive would require tracking those receipts over a 16-month period. So the third problem is, in order to do this accurately, would require completely redoing the roll, which means joint district levies, recalculating urban renewal rates, calculating bond levy rates. So if the language could be written such that it was an estimate of taxes imposed, or some other sort of calculation where the assessor, Washington County estimates that it would take them 2 weeks and substantial computer programming time to run the calculations as the bill is currently presented. So some sort of expedited estimate language that only limits the calculation to the permanent rate levy, not local option levies and bond levies, would be extremely helpful from a workload standpoint. The bill doesn't specifically call for the assessor to make these calculations. It simply says the county shall report. Well, who are the county commissioners going to get to make these calculations? They're going to call the county assessor's office. So from a workload standpoint, we would ask for some tweaks to the bill to make it a little bit more manageable, to come up with a number that we would then report to this lottery commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I think we'll take questions for Tom, since I think his topic is a little different from the other two, if you have questions for him. And I have to say, I really appreciate your willingness to work with us on getting the language right. The issues you've raised are not ones I would have caught. Anything for Tom? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, Jim McCauley representing Washington County. Appreciate the opportunity to speak today on behalf of these bills. I think there's a general statement to look at as you review each of the bills up in front of you today. And I think maybe to put it in context, you got to look at Oregon prior to SIP, so prior to 1993. And I think that's an important contextual framework for this whole conversation, because we're not having this conversation about the amount of money generated from these investments, tax abatement, jobs created without SIP. They just simply are not here. Prior to 93, Intel had about a 20-year footprint in Oregon. While they were looking at plans for investing in fabrication facilities throughout their international market, they looked at Oregon and chose a different state because of the tax structure that's in place. Once SIP came into the framework as part of that economic tool, Intel went into a series of SIP agreements in 94, in 99, 2005, and again just recently in August of 2014. Up until 14, the collective investment from Intel alone is a little shy of $40 billion. That's billion with a B. We just signed an agreement with them in August of 2014, and that is a $100 billion investment over the next 30 years. It's unprecedented. I still have a hard time getting myself wrapped around it in terms of the scale or the impact or the physical investment anchor that that actually provides to the entire state. So again, without SIP, we're not having this conversation whatsoever. Intel's investment alone pours in somewhere around $330, $340 million a year just in income tax and property tax. It's a significant amount of investment that physically isn't here or part of our revenue source, again, if SIP is not physically part of our toolbox construction at this point. We still believe, as a county, from our experiences, that SIP holds, again, a key to providing local governments and the state the ability to compete on a global stage, attracting business development and reinvestment in Oregon's key industries. Counties such as Clatsop, Gillam, Moro, Umatilla, Sherman, Union, along with Multnomah counties, have all had SIP projects, representative which that I wish I had the physical numbers out there, but that's eight counties right now that have a variety of different SIP agreements and scale that are out there. It's significant, it's important to the state, and we would urge your opposition to this bill.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Mary Stern, and I'm here representing the Association of Oregon Counties, or AOC. And as you know, AOC represents all 36 counties in Oregon. And as a former Yamhill County Commissioner, I was very happy each year at budget time to have a small amount of money that we received for economic development. In Yamhill County, we got about $250,000 a year from video lottery, and really that was the only money we had for economic development investment. And AOC tried to beat into all commissioners' heads where that money came from and why it was important. So I thought I have a little research, and I thought that might be helpful for you. In 1985, Oregonians established a lottery constitutionally dedicating the earnings to economic development, all to economic development. Since then, there were changes, and Oregonians dedicated the lottery revenues to education, parks, and wildlife funding as well. In 1991, an agreement was reached whereby the legislature approved state-controlled video lottery, which forfeited a county's right to authorize and regulate gaming in exchange for counties receiving 2.5% of the receipts from all video lottery games for economic development activities. Prior to that date, counties had the right to authorize and regulate gaming, including the authority to establish video lottery on a county-by-county basis. In the 2011-13 biennium, counties received approximately $37 million of video lottery receipts for economic development. This was the county's 2.5% share. By law, these funds were distributed with 10% divided equally among the 36 counties, and the remaining 90% divided by the amount of video lottery played in each of the counties. Mm-hmm. So these receipts are an important revenue source for county strategic economic development activities, such as infrastructure investment, revolving loan funds, and other related economic development programs. Now, for example, Washington County received just over $4 million during the 11-13 biennium. Multnomah County received $10 million, and Morrow County received $136,000. And it should be noted that during that same period, Washington County school districts received over $50 million in lottery funds, Multnomah County schools received over $53 million, and Morrow County schools received $1.3 million. In addition to video lottery funds, counties have a few other tools to assist in economic development. The Strategic Investment Program, or SIP, Enterprise zones and urban renewal districts are the only major locally funded economic tools available in Oregon to create game-changing economic development for the state and local communities. And these tools are for the most part funded by property tax abatements. A county that avails itself of one of these tools, specifically the SIP, should not be penalized for having its video lotteries by having its video lottery dollars taken, particularly when these dollars are part of a long-standing agreement with the state. Under House Bill 2672, Washington and Morrow counties would lose virtually all of their video lottery dollars. In Multnomah County, where there's one SIP exemption, the loss would be somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000 per year until that SIP expires in 2018. Oregon must have options for business incentives. Different kinds of incentives are necessary for different types of businesses. Counties also must maintain an ability to attract investment through a variety of incentive programs. Passage of House Bill 2762 would basically eliminate options such as SIP because counties would be reluctant to give up property tax revenues and give up their video lottery dollars as well. And I see I misspoke. It was if House Bill 2672 passes. AOC's members ask that you not violate the 1991 agreement in which the counties gave up a revenue-raising right in exchange for a meager 2.5% of video lottery revenues. We strongly encourage your opposition to House Bill 2672, and we also stand ready to assist you if you need our assistance as you move forward on these bills.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Chad Freeman, Wendy Johnson, please.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on these bills? Please, go ahead.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I'm new to the League of Oregon Cities, for those of you who haven't met this session, coming from the Oregon Law Commission. You have my written testimony. The League opposes all three of the bills that are before you today because they limit the state's SIP program that's been successful in Oregon and that is an economic development tool for cities and counties. I've listed the specific reasons that these bills provide a barrier or a limit that would serve as such a barrier that we think would negatively impact the program. It's quite difficult to even qualify for the SIP program, and many of the provisions in these bills would make it even harder to qualify and discourage the type of large investments that are happening in Oregon, the very few. Two of the SIP programs are located in cities. Most of them are county agreements, but that's an important piece of this, is that it takes an agreement to even get the SIP program. And so that agreement assures that it's thought through carefully because you are giving up your property taxes to get that benefit. Specifically with this, the bill that you're starting with, 2672, it seems that it sort of misses the economic development point, that it only looks at the negative impact of taking the property tax abatement and doesn't look at the positive impact that the agreement provides in terms of income tax, revenues, and others. It's just looking at one side of the equation. The rest of the points are listed in the written testimony before you, but basically they put either increases on what you have to even qualify, or put other timelines or such that will make getting these agreements more difficult.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Oh,
thank you very much. Chair Barnhart and committee members, for the record, my name is Chad Freeman. I'm here both as a representative of SEDCOR, the Strategic Economic Development Corporation, doing economic development here in the Yamhill, Marion County and Polk and Yamhill counties, as well as chair of the Legislative Committee for the Oregon Economic Development Association. As such, as economic development professionals, we also would like to express our opposition to all three bills, 2672, 2084, and 2098, as we believe that these really do negatively impact the strategic investment program, or the SIP project, as we've heard today. The SIP is a valuable tool for companies which are looking to invest in our region, as well as the state, and has proven to be very effective statewide, with over 8 counties using this program. As we've noted, these investments are sizable investments, and those that result in many, many jobs and much investment in terms of local communities. And more importantly, it grows the traded sector jobs. And I think we've seen and heard earlier today about the impact of the traded sector jobs, both in terms of, again, growing our communities as well as supporting our schools. The SIP has proven effective on recruitment and growing new investment and new jobs within the state. With investments that have been made in this program, they've been added new jobs as well as new capital. In the example today, we have the Washington County alone, 2 SIP recipients, which provide employment for over 17,000 high-wage jobs, which directly support both the school district as well as the community that they're part of. We believe that these proposed changes to SIP will make this tool much more difficult to use, as well as hurting companies and investment, potential investment and employment here in our state and in our communities as a whole. We encourage you to our opposition of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you believe that there are any improvements that could be made to the SIP program? You don't think there's any way that by tweaking it or changing it to try to guarantee more makeup of the law of the significant loss to the state school fund, other ideas, would you be amenable to any changes whatsoever, or do you think it is ideal as it is?
I'll take that. I think the first part, regardless of which changes are made, are needed to be made, I think we need to make sure that you look at the positive impacts in terms of the cash revenue that has been generated, rather than just, I think, the temptation is to look at what could be seen as the deferred income. Any program can be tweaked in terms of improved, and I think the SIP has been in place that it's healthy to take a look at making those changes. But I think, as we heard today, negatively impacting those communities that are choosing to invest in themselves is a difficult way to do that, I think, for the long term.
Follow up.
Yes, please.
I would just say briefly, I think that it is, I think it's inappropriate to not acknowledge the fact that there are both sides. I think you cannot just look at the positive without acknowledging that there is a loss, and that those communities are also choosing, they are ending up disinvesting in some way in that revenue, giving that up, and I think that is significant as well. So I would also say to you, you have to look at both sides, that you cannot just look at the positive without acknowledging the negative.
Thank you. Representative Leininger.
You know, a piece of all of this is, of course, gain share, and my understanding is that the SIP program, which in principle I support, predates the a related redistribution of income program that is gain share. I'm curious what you think about, since these are so interrelated, about changes that have been suggested to the gain share distribution approach.
I'll start with that one. Chair Barnhart, Representative Leininger, I think the bills before you today are all SIP bills, mm-hmm. and so I'm not really prepared to address the gain share issues. I think Representative Smith Warner noted, there's always ways to improve it. It's just that the bills before you today, there were just a lot of criticisms of what they didn't address and the limits they would provide. And these aren't gain share, you know, that formula is not before you today. But I agree that distribution is one of the biggest questions of how to handle this session.
I think that, again, separating those two issues is healthy. I think in terms of...
Please continue.
So separation from, excuse me, maybe I should clarify based on that we're here talking directly about the SIP program in terms of what we see as in the incentive base. In terms of then the other portion of what I was representing, separation there was around that SIP conversation is a healthy conversation that I think there's other bills that are looking at addressing those ongoing as well. And it is a long-term decision that was made a while ago.
One of our difficulties in this committee is making certain that we look at all of the interacting programs that the state has, that the federal government has, that local governments might have. And so I understand the question to be essentially how do these things fit together? And I think what I've heard is that you're really not prepared to answer that question today. But I think that Representative Leininger's, if I can jump in here, I think Representative Leininger's, the essential question is a good one, and that is, how do these things fit together, and how do the totality of all of the different things that government does to encourage a business development here, how does it work, and are there any pieces of it that could be a little leaner and still accomplish the same task? Now, I'm putting words in your mouth, and that may not be what you intended, so why don't you go ahead?
Well, that definitely encompasses part of what I'm thinking about. I guess the point is, and I know that the people in this room are all people who have deep knowledge of the interconnectedness of both of those programs, so that's fine if you would choose not to speak to gain sharing now. But the bottom line is, as a parent of kids in school, someone who doesn't live in Washington County, and God bless Washington County for the great economic development opportunities that it's had and created, but these programs represent an externalization of transaction costs onto other communities for the economic benefit that accrues to the community that enters into the SIP deal. So there's an externalization of the transaction costs on kids who go to schools in other parts of the state who don't get the gain share dollars that currently, under the existing formula, flow to Washington County to do with as it will. But they don't flow to schools in Clackamas County, and they don't flow to schools in Jackson County, and that's a really big deal. And that's, I think, why we are having visits from a lot of advocates on behalf of Washington County who are prepared to suggest changes in the gain share distribution formula, because everybody realizes this is a ton of money at issue, and maybe more money than people originally anticipated, and it's real money when it comes to the number of school days that we can afford in Oregon for all our kids, not just the kids in Washington County. So when we are at the time when it's appropriate to talk about those issues, I really am excited to do that as well.
And I do expect those to come to this to the committee. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it. And thank you both. There's been a lot of discussion in the committee so far today about the word loss. It's something I take issue with, because my understanding is that this is really a program about new investments, programs that would not be here but for the strategic investment program. So is it your understanding that the investments, which I think 25 SIP agreements have been entered into since the early 90s, that these represent new investments, new money, new jobs, which then spring new money into the state school fund that wouldn't otherwise be here?
I can speak to that. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, that is exactly what we're looking at, is that these would not be here but for these investments, and that these are, as I believe was pointed out, very sizable investments in terms of the $100 million threshold for urban and $25 million for the rural communities as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony on House Bill 2672. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2672 and open a public hearing on House Bills 2084 and House Bill 2098. Al and Paul's going to do that one. Okay. Great. Do those two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, continuing on our themes, These two bills are both directly related to the SAP project, perhaps more than 2672. There's two bills before you, House Bill 2084 and House Bill 2098. What I put in under OLIS is I just put them on one sheet here, a very brief summary of what the bills do. House Bill 2084 takes the value cap that you've talked about in the earlier bill of $100 million for the urban, $25 for the rural, and indexes them to changes in the U.S. city average CPI. That, by the way, is what's recommended by Bureau of Labor Statistics for these kinds of adjustments. It also specifies that the property identified in the initial SIP must be certified for occupancy to produce whatever it is producing within 6 years, and within 4 years if there are multiple agreements in which we have, for example, in the Intel case, where we've had multiple agreements over time with the county government. The second measure is 2098, which also indexes the cap. Then it limits the SIP property tax exemption The major change and one of the major differences between the two bills is 2098 excludes land and buildings from the exemption. So the exemption or the cap calculation would only apply to real property that's related to the equipment in the building. Way that the bill currently or the law currently stands is land is the first thing that's calculated toward that cap. So under point three here, it specifies the property is eligible for the exemption if the project has begun within 5 years of concluding an agreement. As you know, there's an agreement process with local officials, the county playing a lead role, but also those other tax districts that are affected, the city, for example. And so you can reach an agreement, but under this provision, the project would have to begin within 5 years of concluding an agreement and completed within 10 years of the agreement. It also limits, and I'm assuming, I think this may need to be clarified a bit in the bill, but limits the cumulative value of property over time that's exempted to $25 billion. Because that's right now we have, for example, last biennium, we had about $11.7 billion total property that was exempted. So this would be something you'd sum up the years to get that total. And finally, in response to some of the testimony you just had on the earlier bill, this one makes it explicit that local school districts, including ESDs, community colleges, are formal participants in the agreement that allocates fee revenue under the SIP. There's a fee revenue provision in the current law that's 25% of the foregone property taxes or a cap of $2 million. That goes in that community service agreement, and what is negotiated with local officials. Under this provision, the education districts, local education districts, would participate in that fee distribution. So the last thing I would say, Mr. Chair, is that we have asked Business Oregon to be here, and Evo Trummer and Art Fisher here for any questions that you may have. Art, of course, has monitored this program since before I can remember. That's a long time ago.
All right. Well, I think we'll take the witnesses we have first, and then we may hear from the department too. Any questions for Paul about these two bills? I have to say I appreciate the summary very much that you've prepared. Thank you. I have three witnesses signed up for these two bills: Jim McCauley, Jody Weiser, and Dale. Is it Fike? Feek, would the three of you come up? I know you're not on the same sides of the bill, but for convenience, that would be helpful to the committee. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on these bills today, recognizing we've already heard from some other people, we have their written testimony in the bill, in the record? All right. Mr. McCauley?
Oh, I get to go first.
Why not?
Jim McCauley, members of the committee, representing Washington County. I'm not going to belabor anything what I shared with earlier, but I think it goes without saying that we again believe that the SIP program, as it stands today, is an incredibly valuable economic development tool. When you start making any kind of adjustments in it that start taking away some of that value, you reduce its overall use and value. These agreements that Washington County participates in don't take place over a weekend. They literally take place over several months. It's difficult. The negotiations are very onerous, and out of that process, we come up with what we feel, again, ultimately is a good deal or a good package overall, trying to balance the economic development elements in terms of what we're going to get long term, but also trying to balance the other issues that are out there, which is why when we take the community service fee and we take some of the other fees and things of that nature, that's all part of the negotiation process and things of that nature. Speaking specifically to the two bills, I'll start with 2098. Again, we have, you start requiring something different in the, how the current SIPs operate, with mandated 5 years to start or to complete a construction project within 10 years, or limit the SIP investment to $25 billion, or limit the SIP's value to only the manufacturing industry itself. You're cutting yourself short on future investments, scale investments, and of course, jobs. And I just don't, again, we as a county think that's a place that you need to be going. It's not something that's going to be adding value in our experiences, which have, you know, certainly eclipsed 20 years at this point. 2084, same kind of thing. You add a CPI retrospective look to this, and you're basically asking a company to sign an agreement, and they're not going to know what their future annual payments look like because they're all dependent upon CPI. That all goes into their overall framework. It goes into their business model in terms of when they make decisions or how they want to make a long-term commitment to a region. We know that Intel has been very clear, if you want to just look at them as one company, without SIP, they're not here, period. They'll make the investment some other place. There are plenty of other states in this country willing to help them out or provide them with a tax incentive to come to their state, and they've demonstrated that in the past. Finally, I'll say just in terms of school districts, we work collectively with all sorts of different partners within the county. For the last 2 years, we've distributed $13 million to school districts within Washington County. Each of them have collectively used it a little bit differently. Some has been additional teachers added to the program. Some have been additional days. Some have been a combination of that. We fully expect that that type of relationship is going to continue in the future. And to a district, not one has asked to be part of any kind of SIP agreement process, and has no interest in being part of a SIP agreement process in the future. They've got their priorities. They understand the relationship with us as a local government and what we're trying to balance. So appreciate, again, the opportunity to comment. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions from Mr. McCauley? Yes, starting at the end. Representative Smith-Warner, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little faster on the draw than you, Representative. Yes, I am. Yes, I am, sir. Yes. Thank you. So my understanding of how SIPs work is that you enter into the agreement for a period of time, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. May I follow up?
Yes, please.
I have to ask this every time. Okay, yeah. Sorry. What I'm trying to get to is, the first thing I'm trying to get to is the idea that, what year was this initially passed? 93?
1993.
So in 1993, with these dollar amounts, $100 million for urban and $25 million for rural, and the idea that in 22 years, it is not yet okay for us to raise these to reflect some sort of cost of living adjustment, when I think that costs and prices over the last 22 years have indeed significantly increased. I find that a fairly, I mean, to me, that's kind of the easiest part of all of this, even that the Dr. Warner referenced that that is how the Bureau, not the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I think, but that's a fairly common accounting principle that is recommended. And yeah. So I guess don't businesses expect their, you know, their prices, all of their budgets to go up in a 22-year period? I mean, to me, the idea that we would raise this and try to index it somehow to inflation does not seem like an unreasonable thing that would drive businesses, you know, screaming from the state. If we tried to make this at least keep up with inflation.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the question is in there, but
well,
you can go ahead and find it.
I could take a stab if you like.
To translate just a little bit, the normal increase in assessed value that most properties go through is a maximum of 3% a year, and that would allow for an increase in tax of roughly that amount. I'm not certain what 3% into 22 years is, but it's very close to double by the time you do the compounding. So the question is, why shouldn't it be moving along as costs move along?
Right. Chair Barnhart, Representative Smith-Warner, I don't want to give you the impression that it's not time for a relook. I think all policy, you have to take a look at time to see how it's doing and seeing how it's functioning. What I can offer is that from our experiences as a county, the program is working well. When we go through the negotiation process, and when we went through this latest time, we actually doubled the amount, the total collection of fees moving forward on Intel's new SIP from what we historically used or we used in a 2005 SIP. So I think part of that question ultimately goes to the business community as well. They have costs. Everything, again, I get it. Things cost more, things of that nature. But from our experiences, if you modify this program, and again, under any of these circumstances and under any of these bills, it's a modification, and it is not sending, I'll say, a business-friendly message back to the companies that we deal with.
Just one quick follow-up. So let me ask you what I asked somebody on the prior panel. So you believe that SIP should stay exactly as it is now, and there is not is there a change you would support?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Smith-Warner, no changes that are in these bills.
Is there a change that you would support beyond that's not in one of these, maybe?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Smith-Warner, I think about the only change, and I think, you know, I've been running this issue for years. People don't like me coming in the office because they hear SIP gain share. But I will tell you that if you want to make an improvement, focus in on the rural side of the SIP. Try to make it more available to more communities throughout the state. Look at a different threshold. Not everybody has $25 million to go spend in some site development in Harney County, as an example. The other piece of this thing, too, is, you know, they're artificially constrained, essentially to land use lines. So urban SIP is confined to a UGB. Rural SIP is confined to outside the UGB. From my perspective, those put in a screening mechanism, essentially an artificial mechanism. And I think local government should have the opportunity to look at all those types of economic development tools and stuff out there and not be constrained by something physically in land use.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that might be lacking from our discussion is a sense of perspective. And you were talking about how, you know, it's obviously a competitive playing field for companies like Nike, like Intel, others, to be able to offer something that is attractive to them to encourage them to continue to remain because they're going to make decisions that are in their best interest. What might you know about what other states are putting on the table? Because we're in a competitive, you know, it's a competitive playing field. Do you have any knowledge about what other states, i.e. Texas, California, New Mexico, other states might be offering or have on the table that these companies are wrestling with as they make their long-term decisions about where they're going to put down roots?
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, Representative Johnson, I think it's an excellent question. I wish I had some physical details with you for you, and I'll definitely get back to you. But it becomes an open checkbook. You have states in other parts of the country that are willing to write significant checks. They're willing to write off income tax for employees, for businesses coming in. They're willing to write off an incredible tax incentive deal to get these companies in. And that's one of the things that's certainly changed since 93, is the overall competitiveness of these type of investments. Companies have and operate on a global stage, and we're one pinprick in that global stage. And if we don't have the ability to compete with other parts of the world, because this really literally is on the table when an Intel or companies like that look to make an investment, they can as easily go to Israel as they can to Ireland, as they can to New Mexico or to Oregon. And I think it's critical that people understand that and understand that being competitive is important.
but I'll make sure I get back the more details.
Thank you.
And I think Business Oregon may have some information that they can impart to us on that question as well. Other questions? Yes, Representative Leininger, please.
Thank you so much. And also thank you for coming in, everybody. I think I heard you say just now, Mr. McCauley, that there is no change in any of these three bills that could be made that would not send a business-unfriendly message. And I just want to probe that a little bit. You know, when I was working at a big company as general counsel, I asked our company what they thought the most helpful thing the state could do to be good to business. And the answer that I heard was, we need to have a strong education system. This from a company, you know, that is trying to make money appropriately. They thought that a strong education system was really important. And I see in both, and I see in a couple of these bills, language that would modify the existing framework so as to help make sure that any, that school districts and education service districts are held harmless. I mean, so I guess as I think through how that would work, that means that maybe less money would go unrestricted to, say, a Washington County, and instead it would go to the school districts within our community so that school districts are not having their funding diminished because of the economic development incentives. Are you saying that having the fees or the proceeds go to school districts instead of, say, as general funding to Washington County would send a business-unfriendly message, or did I misunderstand that?
Well, again, sorry, Chair Barnhart, Representative Leininger. Let me walk through it again. So both House Bill 2084 and 2098 add, I'll say, elements of school issues into the framework, okay? Whether they're physically part of the SIP agreement in that process, whether that adds value, I honestly don't know if it would at the end of the day, but I can tell you from our own experiences, no one within our county since 93 has asked to be part of those SIP agreements, you know, that represent the school district, okay? When you look at 2672 that we already talked about, I suppose that would be a different case, but again, you're pulling physical money off the table as part of that overall framework, and you're penalizing counties and local governments who are looking at economic development and are trying to create jobs and things of that nature, which also in turn create additional tax revenue. So I think it ultimately, I think, represents a balance, but I think from our county, and I think the other seven or so that have SIP agreements, if they have a SIP agreement and knew that their lottery money that was coming in or has been coming in since the agreement was changed here years ago was going to be going away, that to me it seems like a penalty more than anything else. And I think ultimately part of the SIP value here is the sheer scale of investments that follow and the sheer revenue that is created as a result. This ultimately comes back to a but-for argument. We're not here debating SIP. Or because if it's not here, these companies' investments are not physically here in the state. And again, from our own experience, you make the adjustments, you make the package less valuable to them, then they start looking at other places on this global market.
Can I ask one follow-up?
Yes, please. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my feeling is a lot of why people are energized around this topic is the, say, it might be $90 million in the next biennium that is income tax revenue that would otherwise get distributed to schools around Oregon and other important basic needs services of government, that instead, by virtue of the gain share piece of the SIP gain share combination, the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, these things really inextricably linked in my view, that 90 million that doesn't go to education in other parts of the state or you know, human services or public safety in other parts of the state, because for some reason we have come to a decision that a lot of people are looking at revisiting right now about how that $90 million in revenue from retained and new jobs associated with the SIP gets spent. And so it's not the entirety of that issue is not encompassed by these three bills, but I think it's hard to think about any of this without thinking about that $90 million or what was it, $35 million last biennium. It's a real money at a scarce resource time, and so I'll leave that for now, but I do think it warrants a whole lot of ventilation going forward.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to give Washington County an opportunity to respond to that question, because really the question is, are there costs imposed by the drawing in of new jobs and the revenue and the growth that justifies, for example, the gain share payments? I think that question has been asked, and the county deserves an opportunity to respond about if there are costs.
Sure. So, Chair Barnhart, Representative Davis, there are. It is very difficult to isolate that down to a physical per employee type of calculation. But, I mean, just in general, when you have that type of population growth that we've had, when you have the type of economic development that has occurred, you have those types of costs that are out there. You look at a transportation system in Washington County alone, I think the rough number for the road improvement projects over the years or in the future are somewhere around $2 billion, I think is what our transportation plan has looked at. We have MISTIP, which no other county has, and we're fortunate. That's a $35 million infusion a year, specifically just on road improvement projects. We're trying to take care of those types of investments, and it all collectively goes into funneling. And if you look at how we have spent gain share money in the last few years, it has gone to that type of community infrastructure. It's gone to road improvements, trying to improve congestion. It's gone to things like libraries and things of that nature as well. I think ultimately for us, gain share is obviously an active part of this conversation in this building.
All right, and having said that, I'd like to leave the rest of that conversation for the time when we get to Gainshare. I'm very conscious of our time, and I have two more witnesses to hear from. Are there any other brief questions for Mr. McCauley? If not, please let's go ahead, and we'll hear from our other two witnesses. Yes, ma'am.
So I'm Jody Weiser, speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. So there's two bills that ask you to sit down and look at what to do about SIP and how to modernize it and bring it up to today. SIP existed since 1993, and as Representative Smith Warner has pointed out, it hasn't really been adjusted except that the rural SIP was added. In the packet of materials that I gave you, it's a list of the SIP agreements that have been signed to date. Minus two that seem to not be going forward. And if you look at the investment today, all of them would meet the investment criteria if we had indexed them to inflation in the original legislation. Because today, instead of $100 million, they would need to invest $165 in an urban area and $33 million in a rural area. And so just looking at the if you can scroll to the page that looks like this. If you look through the list of wind farms, for instance, I mean, I think this is part of, this shows why we need to reconsider. There's a wind farm, the PGE Bigelow Canyon wind farm, had an investment of $960 million, and they would be paying the same taxes as the Combine Hills wind farm that invested only $137 million, because they would each have met the cap. So each of them would be paying taxes on $25 million, plus they'd have a community service fee of $500,000. And that's what they would pay, even though the difference between the size of the investment is massive. And so, you know, when this bill was written, the law was written in 1993, nobody had any sense of what actually was going to happen. We didn't even know wind farms were going to exist in Oregon in 93. And they were just down in California in a little valley back then. And so we can't be sure of the future, but it would seem rather strange that in Umatilla County they would be getting the same amount for a small wind farm operation as they would be getting in Sherman County for a really big one if they did nothing but follow the rules of the SIP agreements. And so it's something, you know, it's one of the pieces that should be considered. When we did the law, I wasn't here, when the law was written, we said they would pay taxes on the first $100 million of investment, and they would pay a community service fee that was 25% of the abated taxes, capped at $2 million. So if you're in Washington County and you invest $400 million or $2 billion, you're going to pay the same amount of taxes. And that, there again, it does, that doesn't quite fit. Maybe the cap should be removed. We asked to have one of these two bills, the 2084, written up, and it was actually since then that we had other conversations that made us, with people who are in the field, you know, they're making agreements with businesses, that made us say, you know what, there needs to be a work group on this to really work at it. Because there were rural counties that said, you know, we won't get $25 million, but we'd rather not, say, charge nothing in a five-year enterprise zone. The SIP agreement would allow us to charge something if it was, say, a $5 million threshold. And if you took the cap off of the community service fee portion, you could pick those people up. And then we had somebody in a rural county say, I don't like this legislation because I have a $2 billion project coming to my county. And I'm starting my negotiations from taxes on $25 million. The legislature isn't helping me out here with that low threshold. It's just not related enough to the cost. So that's one piece of what I think should be considered. Another piece is the fact that county commissioners and city council members are making decisions about the taxes that will be abated for all taxing districts, and everybody isn't at the table. In the 1993 agreements, despite the fact that education wasn't required to be at the meetings, they were invited to be at the meetings. And I talked with Nikki Squires, who was the superintendent of schools for Hillsborough back then. She said, we got notice of the meeting the day before the meeting. We went. They said, oh, it'll be, you know, I said, no, you need to be distributing some of this money to schools. They agreed. It was actually in the original agreements that most of the money would go to K-12 education. But that was before measures 547 and 50 and the whole idea of the funding formula, and you won't really, you know, you don't get really gain anything. But for those agreements, they were making payments to schools, and then it stopped. And when we talk about schools, community colleges keep getting left out of the picture. But there's a community college in Washington County. It's part of the community college system. And they're not getting their share because their taxes have been abated in decisions that they weren't invited to the table on. I think that it makes sense to index these things to inflation since 1993. But I think also we have to look at what we do with the money that's collected. Most of the money goes to Washington County. Last year it was about $38.1 million of gain share, for instance. 99.2% of it went to Washington County. That's just where the big projects are. Of the money that the actual levied tax and the SIP fees that Washington County got for two Intel projects and Genentech, they got total payments of $24.2 million, but 81% of that $24 million was not shared with the schools as part of the normal distribution. The Port of Portland got its share, the Metro got its share, Hillsborough got its share, Washington County got its share, Tualatin Valley Fire District serves one of the campuses, and it got its share, but the schools didn't. If you took that same amount of money and you gave every taxing district its share, it would make more sense, because otherwise you have one group of people abating somebody else's taxes. And currently, when they distribute money in Washington County, they distribute to all the schools in Washington County based upon the attendance of Intel and Genentech students. but it's distributed outside the school funding formula. So it hurts the rest of the state. And if the rule was, call it what you want, call it a tax, property tax, or call it a fee, but the money gets distributed the way the public voted that property taxes would be distributed in their county, then it would be a far fairer situation because you wouldn't have one group of people making a decision about somebody else's budget. And in this case, because of the school funding formula, they're making decisions about what's going to be available in Rep. Johnson's district and Rep. Smith Warner's district and Rep. Whitsitt's district, not just their own districts. And that's really not a fair situation. So I think that neither of the bills before you are perfect and that it would make sense to have a work group that included legislators and county commissioners, people who have negotiated these things, and that that's it's time for us to do this, and it's time for us to do it this session.
Thank you. I'm going to ask our last person at the table to make his statement, and then we'll ask questions. And I apologize for not doing a better job of controlling the time earlier. Please go ahead.
Representative Chair Barnhart and other legislators, I'm Dale Feek from Forest Grove. I have family that lives in Hillsboro next to Intel manufacturing plants. I want to emphasize, please listen carefully in detail to Jody Weiser, Tax Fairness of Oregon. I have high regard for her volunteer work, her study, and her understanding of the issues. So please read her stuff in detail. I agree with what she said. I disagree with the analysis of Intel and the benefit, total benefit in Washington County. In particular, I'm very knowledgeable, have been studying for at least a year and a half about the economic and health public benefit of disbenefit of Intel in Washington County. There are many issues related to public health, toxic emissions, and greenhouse gases. But that's not what I'm talking about now. I'm not really concerned about Intel moving. Intel has a plant in China. They have less environmental law. And Intel will go wherever they can make a profit. That's the bottom line. Where can they get clean? Where can they get amount of water? And where can they get the energy to do their job to increase their profits? And so I'm more concerned about equity, fairness as a previous school teacher, and teaching in different districts within the state. Equity and fairness is my deal. And I've made public comment before the Environmental Equality Commission on this and other places. And it's not fair to have Washington County get that much money and take it away from other school districts. It's just not fair. It's a fairness issue, as Tax Fairness in Oregon would say so. That's all.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Now, questions. Representative Whitsitt.
I just wondered if Tax Fairness of Oregon has done a study on how many of the green energy wind projects have already received Betsy's that are on that list up there, which is basically a subsidy from the state of Oregon.
That is probably, they probably all have. I don't actually know because there is a, we've stopped subsidizing some of them, you know, we stopped. So there might be, I don't know, the PGE plant.
Just a moment. That would be a great question for Business Oregon. They're sitting listening to it. We're not likely to get to them today, but maybe they can fill us in on that question because they know, of course, where the Betsy's went, and they can use the list they have here to make the comparison. Do you have other questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Thank you from Business Oregon for sitting in with us today. We are out of time for today, but you may get some questions from us in writing, or we may ask you to come back later, if that's okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony today. With that, we'll close the public hearings on House Bill 2084 and House Bill 2098. Colleagues, we're not meeting tomorrow because of the likely length of the floor session. We will see you on Thursday. Paul?
And Mr. Chair, just for the members, we've taken tomorrow's, what was posted for tomorrow's agenda and moved it to next Wednesday.
So we'll be on the 11th.
That'll be posted at the exact same agenda.
Very good. Thank you very much. And with that, the committee is adjourned.